Welcome back to Basketball Home, the place to be for everything that happened on the court over this holiday break.
Hey, everyone.
And if you thought this Thanksgiving weekend was, you know, just about turkey and shopping, you definitely missed out.
Oh, for sure. It was genuine high-stakes chaos. We saw the NBA Cup group stages wrap up with some unbelievable drama.
Right. And then you had massive upsets, literal buzzer beaters in college hoops, and some teams that we thought were contenders suddenly looking like they're in full-blown crisis mode.
It was a ton to process.
Exactly. So today, we are unpacking all of it for you. We're going to lock in on the new NBA Cup knockout bracket.
We have to. It's finally set.
We'll also break down the biggest Black Friday dramas in the NBA. That means the Mavs and Lakers trade buzz, Giannis's pretty raw frustration in Milwaukee, and the defensive collapse happening in Cleveland.
And we can't forget college. That Ohio State finish. We have to talk about that.
Oh, we absolutely have to. So let's just jump right into the NBA Cup, because Friday was the day everything got decided.
Yep. It was the make-or-break day. By the end of it, the single elimination knockout bracket was finalized for December 9th and 10th.
So let's start in the East. This is where the final spots were clinched with a mix of grit, some serious star power, and a perfect example of the difference between one great player and a great team.
That's the perfect way to frame it. The Orlando Magic, they secured Group B after a really tough 112-109 win over the Detroit Pistons.
And what's so important about the Magic is that they finished undefeated in their group.
Exactly. That 4-0 record gives them home court for the quarterfinal, which is huge. A lot of their success came from Desmond Bane, who dropped 37 points and really carried them when things got tight.
But the real story of that game, I mean, it has to be Cade Cunningham.
Oh, absolutely. It was one of the most magnificent and, you know, ultimately heartbreaking individual performances we've seen all year.
A Herculean effort is the only way to describe it. And it tells you everything you need to know about the Pistons roster right now.
It really does. So Cade plays 40 really physical minutes, and he racks up this monster triple-double. 39 points, 13 rebounds, and 11 assists. He was literally the entire offense.
And here's this stat that just blows my mind. He was a plus 16 in his minutes on the court.
Right. He was actively winning the game for them when he was playing.
But the other side of that coin is just tragic. In the 8 minutes, he sat on the bench to rest.
Just 8 minutes.
The Pistons were outscored by 19 points.
19. It just exposes their biggest weakness. They have zero offensive structure, no scoring threat at all when he sits down. And other teams know it. They just run all over them.
And you could see that workload just catching up to him. He missed a huge free throw late when they were down by 3.
And another one earlier that would put them up 2. He had been perfect from the line, I think 9 for 9 up until that point.
That's the physical and mental toll right there.
Yeah.
He also had 8 turnovers, 3 of them in the fourth quarter. It wasn't just a loss. It felt like a desperate cry for some help on that roster.
It really did.
Okay, so moving over to Group C, the New York Knicks punched their ticket. They beat the struggling Milwaukee Bucks 118-109 at the Garden.
Yeah, and this was supposed to be a big showdown, right? Especially with Giannis Antetokounmpo coming back from that groin injury.
And Giannis showed up, at least in the box score, 30 points, 15 rebounds, 8 assists.
For sure. But I think the consensus takeaway from everyone who watched that game was that Jalen Brunson was the more unstoppable superstar on the floor that night.
Oh, without a doubt. Brunson finished with a game-high 37 points, and he was efficient, shooting 12 for 21. He just led the charge.
And it wasn't just that he scored. It was when he scored. The pressure was on late in the fourth quarter. The Bucks had cut a 13-point lead all the way down to 2.
Right. They were threatening this huge comeback.
And Brunson immediately responds. He draws a foul on Giannis, shooting 3, and then just calmly drills all 3 of those free throws. That is clutch.
And then just a couple of possessions later, he completely sealed it. He had that spectacular 3-point play, drew a foul on Miles Turner, hit that signature floater, and then made the free throw.
That screen he let out after the play, I mean, that told you everything. That was the release of the whole team's determination. It was a massive moment for them.
Meanwhile, this was the Bucks' 7th straight loss. 7.
Which is just wild for a team with that kind of talent. They get eliminated from the Cup, but a 7-game losing streak, that's more than a slump. That's a crisis. And we definitely need to circle back to that.
For sure. So to round out the East, the wild card spot was the last piece.
And the Miami Heat grabbed it. They were the only other team to finish 3-1, so even though they didn't win their group, the tiebreakers, specifically their point differential, worked in their favor.
So the Eastern Conference quarterfinals are set for December 9th. It's the Miami Heat traveling to face the undefeated Orlando Magic.
And the New York Knicks will visit the Toronto Raptors. And again, Orlando gets that home court advantage because of their perfect record.
Okay, let's head over to the Western Conference, which was just pure chaos. We saw a massive upset that I don't think anyone saw coming.
Yeah, but let's start with the undisputed champs right now, the Oklahoma City Thunder. They clinched Group A, beating the Phoenix Suns 123-119 in a really high-powered game.
The Thunder are just terrifying. I don't think that's an overstatement. They're now 19-1, which is the best record in the league, and they've extended their win streak to 11 games.
And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he just keeps making history. It was his 92nd consecutive game with 20 or more points.
Which ties in with Wilt Chamberlain for the second longest streak ever.
It's just incredible. To be in the same sentence as Wilt for that kind of consistency is mind-boggling.
And here's the part that should scare the rest of the league. They're getting even better.
Right. That game was the season debut for Jalen Williams, who was out with a wrist injury. So a team that's already 19-1 is just getting one of its best young players back into the rotation.
They are, without a doubt, the favorites to win the whole cup right now. Even when you consider, you know, their strength of schedule, which we should get to later.
We should. But first, we have to talk about the huge, just illogical upset in Group C.
The San Antonio Spurs?
Yeah.
Somehow, some way, they beat Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets 139-136.
And they did it without their star, Victor Wembanyama, who's out with a calf strain. He's expected back for the quarterfinal, but still, Stephon Castle was out too. This was a massive statement win for that young team.
It defied all logic, especially after how they started the game. They had to rally from an 18-point third-quarter deficit against the defending champs.
The hero was Devin Vassell. He was just lights out. He led the team with a season-high 33 points and went 7 of 9 from 3. Julian Champagne was also huge with 25 and 10.
This loss was all about Denver just completely collapsing. The reports coming out of Denver describe their defense as simply a disaster.
And you can see why. They had 17 turnovers, which the Spurs immediately turned into 30 points.
30 points. You just can't do that. You can't give up 30 points off your own mistakes and expect to win a game.
Nope. And even though Jamal Murray had 37 and Jokic almost had a triple-double, their defensive effort was just non-existent. It was their third straight loss at home, and it knocked them out of the cup.
That lack of focus is becoming a theme for them, and it's something to watch.
For sure. So finally, the Los Angeles Lakers, they took care of business in Group B. They finished with a perfect 4-0 record after beating the Dallas Mavericks 129-119.
So they joined the Magic as the only undefeated teams, and they also get that crucial home court advantage.
And that brings us to the final piece, the Western wildcard spot. Despite losing to OKC, the Phoenix Suns managed to grab it.
And this is where the tiebreaker rules get really important.
Exactly. So both the Suns and the Memphis Grizzlies finished with a 3-1 record. But the reason the Suns advanced was their point differential.
So, just to clarify for everyone, that's the total margin you've outscored your opponents by during the group stage. The Suns just had a better number.
Right. It was the deciding factor. And it means the Grizzlies, despite having a great record, are out. It's a tough break.
So the Western Conference quarterfinals, those are on December 10th. It'll be the Phoenix Suns at the Oklahoma City Thunder.
And the San Antonio Spurs will be at the Los Angeles Lakers. And if the favorites win, we could be looking at a Thunder-Lakers showdown in the semifinals in Vegas.
That would be something. Okay, so let's move from the bracket to the broader league drama. Black Friday gave us some intense storylines about stars, trades, and team chemistry.
And of course, a lot of that focus landed squarely on that Lakers-Mavericks game. There was so much intrigue there before the game even started.
Right. The Lakers won 129-119, and it was a great offensive show. Austin Reeves was explosive for the Lakers, dropped a game-high 38.
And Luka Doncic had 35 for Dallas. He's just been on fire. But the narratives around the players were way louder than the final score.
And the biggest name was Anthony Davis. He returned for the Mavericks, playing against his former team after missing 14 games with that calf injury.
It was a huge return for Dallas. They've been struggling so badly on defense without him.
He gave them that stability they needed, for sure. But he was on a strict minutes restriction. He missed the entire fourth quarter, and that just put the spotlight right back on his health.
Yeah, and Davis himself admitted it was tough. He said trying to find a rhythm playing in just five-minute bursts was tough, for sure, especially when you're used to anchoring the defense for 10 minutes at a time.
And that health question, it feeds directly into this massive trade buzz that's getting louder and louder.
It really is. The reports are saying that trading Anthony Davis is a real possibility, and I would even say likelihood, for the Mavericks this season. That's a huge shift in direction.
And it seems pretty clearly tied to what the Mavericks see as their next era, right?
It seems so. Sources are suggesting it's about fully pivoting to build around the generational talent of Cooper Flagg.
Who, for context, is one of the most hyped college recruits we've seen in a long time.
Exactly. So if the Mavericks don't think their current core is going to win a title, then moving a star like Davis now, while he's healthy and his value is high, to get assets to build around a new core in a few years. It makes sense.
So the idea is you pair those assets and Flagg with Kyrie Irving, who they just extended.
That seems to be the plan. Keep Kyrie as a dynamic scorer next to Flagg as your foundational pieces. But AD's health for the next few months is the ultimate X factor. If he dominates and stays healthy, they can get a massive return. If he gets hurt again, his value just tanks.
And of course, there was that whole pregame drama with Davis and LeBron James.
Oh, right. The manufactured controversy.
Exactly. Fans online went crazy over this short video clip that made it look like Anthony Davis snubbed LeBron during the pregame greetings.
It's just a perfect example of how context gets lost online. When you actually watch the full extended clip, you can see they did embrace briefly. There's still mutual respect there.
It was just the media looking for a story, but the real story is the trade talk, not a fake snub.
Absolutely.
And speaking of LeBron, yeah, he's 40 years old, still playing at an elite level, and he also talked about his ultimate plan for his son, Bronny.
Yeah, and I found this really interesting. He said he wants Bronny to walk his own journey. He explained that he can give him the blueprint, show him everything he's learned, but ultimately, he wants Bronny to walk through the fire as well.
That shows a really deep understanding of the impossible pressure Bronny is under.
It does. True success requires you to go through the struggle yourself. Even when you have the greatest mentor in the world right there, it's a pretty philosophical take on sports parenting.
Okay, let's pivot from trade buzz to two elite teams that are in a bit of a crisis right now, Milwaukee and Cleveland.
We mentioned the Bucks lost their seventh straight game, and Giannis, he did not hold back his feelings after that loss to the Knicks.
No, he did not. His message was sharp, it was critical, and it was aimed right at his teammates' commitment.
Yeah, he stressed that they need to get back to the little things, which he defined as, you know, the fundamentals. Defending, communicating, rebounding, all the stuff that doesn't depend on whether your shot is falling.
And he said if players are only worried about scoring, they get frustrated and feel like they cannot do nothing else for the team if they miss a few shots.
And then he delivered the line that was just a devastating indictment of where they're at. He said, this is not one-man show, that we got to do it together.
Oof. Coming from your franchise cornerstone, that's a brutal assessment of the team's effort. It tells you this isn't about coaching or schemes. It's about a lack of collective will.
And that exact theme, that lack of effort and focus, it connects directly to the Cleveland Cavaliers. They lost to the Hawks 130-123 and got knocked out of the Cup for the second year in a row.
And their issue isn't abstract at all. It's one very specific mechanical failure transition defense.
That's right. The reports are basically spelling out the blueprint that opponents are now using to just dismantle the Cavs, just run on them relentlessly.
And the Hawks absolutely torched them with it. They outscored Cleveland 36-17 in fast break points. That's a 19-point difference just on the break.
When you talk about a mechanical failure, it means players are literally not sprinting back to fill the paint. They're not communicating to pick up the ball handler, and they're letting guys leak out for easy layups and open threes.
Coach Kenny Atkinson was blunt about it. He said, they outplayed us, outcoached us. The whole team was just mentally disconnected.
Donovan Mitchell called it a mental thing. He said, the team has to get our A back, and that the loss was solely off of that.
And Evan Mobley pointed out how hard it is to communicate on the fly in transition. But, I mean, that's just part of the game.
It is. And the bottom line is, until the Cavs fix this simple fundamental flaw, just getting back on defense, teams are going to keep running past them. It's a solvable problem that's becoming a season-long wound.
All right, shifting gears a bit, let's touch on a few other, frankly, ugly losses from the weekend, starting with the very perplexing Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, they just continued this frustrating pattern they have of losing to bad teams. They fell 123-116 to the 4-14 Charlotte Hornets.
The loss drops them to 9-9, and it just signals a huge problem with consistency. Their defense remains, as one source put it, a massive problem. They gave up 67 points in the first half alone.
Just a sieve. And even with Coby White and Josh Giddey combining for 50 points, it wasn't enough to overcome that.
We should probably also mention that incident with Giddey, too.
Right. Giddey, who had a great game, 25, 11, and 9, he got into it with a fan late in the game. He just said the fan said something I didn't like, and the fan got ejected.
It's unfortunate. Players shouldn't have to deal with that. But back to the team. Coach Billy Donovan just lamented their lack of consistency and physicality. He chalked it up to human nature and midseason fatigue.
Which, for a team with the Bulls' payroll and expectations, is just not an acceptable excuse for these kinds of losses.
Not at all. Over in Golden State, the Warriors are facing a big test. Star Stephen Curry is out for at least a week with a right quad contusion.
Yep, a strained muscle too. So he'll be reevaluated in a week, which means he's probably missing at least three crucial games.
And what's most telling here isn't the injury itself, it's the reaction from his teammate, Jimmy Butler.
Right. Butler basically called out the team's defensive focus, calling it just sad.
He said, and I'm quoting here, "I don't care about offense. We need to guard somebody." He challenged the entire team to care more about the details on defense.
And the logic there is clear, right? Without Steph's gravity and elite shooting, the Warriors lose their margin for error on offense. If they want to win games while he's out, the team defense has to step up immediately to compensate.
Absolutely. And finally, let's talk about the Sacramento Kings, who are in a deep slide. They lost 128-119 to the Utah Jazz, which snapped a 9-game winning streak against them.
And that loss drops the Kings to a really surprising and frankly alarming 5-15 record.
Another game where poor defense and a lack of pace control were the main culprits. Zach LaVine actually broke out of his slump with 34 points, and Russell Westbrook got his 206th career triple-double.
Which is just casual for him at this point, 16, 14, and 12. But the team allowed Utah to dictate the pace, and they just got run out of the building.
You saw it happen in real time. Utah had a massive 20-2 run in the second quarter, and then a 10-0 run to end the third.
When you have a 5-15 record this early, even considering they've had the league's toughest schedule, it signals one thing to everyone else.
Trade activity is coming.
It has to be. When a team underperforms this badly, you have to look at shaking things up. Reports say they'll look to move some of those big veteran contracts to bring in better defenders or more consistent shooters. That record, schedule or not, is just unsustainable.
All right, let's shift from the pros to the college ranks, where the holiday weekend was all about thrilling tournament finals and one just absolutely soul-crushing buzzer beater.
A buzzer beater that felt like a horror movie rerun for one particular program. We have to start with the Ohio State Buckeyes losing a heartbreaker, 67-66, to Pitt.
The word everyone used was deja vu, complete agonizing deja vu.
And here's why it was so devastating. The final play was this sideways, deep three-pointer at the buzzer from Pitt's DeMarco Minor. It clinched a sweep of the home-and-home series.
But the psychological twist, the part that makes it so brutal, is that Ohio State lost to Pitt on a buzzer beater the night before the Michigan football game last year, too.
To have that exact same scenario play out 1 year later, right before the biggest rivalry game of the season. I mean, that has to be just incredibly traumatic for those players and that program.
The game itself had this really weird, uneven flow. Pitches dominated early. They jumped out to a 16-4 lead in the first 6 minutes.
And they were up 34-24 at halftime, mostly because Ohio State was shooting terribly, like 38% from the field, and they weren't rebounding.
But Ohio State came out in the second half and mounted this furious rally, mostly on the back of Devin Royal. He scored 17 of his 22 points after the break.
They finally took their first lead of the entire game with about 8.5 minutes left on 2 free throws from Christoph Tilley. They were finally showing some fight.
And Tilley had one of the weirdest stat lines I've seen. It tells you everything about their second half strategy.
It really does. He finished with 10 points, but almost all of them were from the free throw line. He was 8-for-8 on free throws, but only 1-for-8 from the field.
That just shows you they completely shifted to an attack the rim strategy. They were forcing Pitt to foul them to generate points.
So we get to the final seconds, and Ohio State thinks they have it won. Tilley misses a layup, but Amara Bynum gets the offensive board and tips it in.
Puts him up 66-64 with only 4 seconds left.
4 seconds, just enough time for Miner to sprint up the court, take one dribble, and hit that off-balance sideways deep three with a hand right in his face.
It capped an incredible night for him, 18 points, 5 steals, and it was just a devastating finish for the Buckeyes. The margin for error in college hoops is just non-existent.
For sure. Okay, on to some happier news for the tournament winners. Colorado was crowned the Acrisure Holiday Classic champions, They beat Washington 81-68.
And this game was a story of a massive lead and an even bigger comeback attempt. Colorado was up 47-30 at halftime. They looked completely dominant.
But college basketball is a game of runs. Washington came roaring back in the second half, went on a 19-4 run, and actually tied the game at 52. All the momentum was gone.
But the mark of a good team is how you respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
And Colorado held their nerve. They hit some timely late threes from Felix Casares and McKaylee to pull away and secure the win. They're now 7-0.
Over at the Ratty Children's Invitational, TCU won the championship, beating Wisconsin 74-63. And this is a big one for them.
Yeah, TCU is now 5-2, and they're riding a huge wave of momentum after upsetting the reigning national champions, the Florida Gators, in the first round of that tournament.
That upset was a massive statement. And in the final, they just controlled the game from start to finish. They opened on a 14-4 run and never looked back. It was a real team effort.
And finally, the Missouri Tigers, they cruised to an 86-59 win over Cleveland State, moving to a perfect 8-0. This one was a little personal too, right?
It was. It was against their former coach Dennis Gates' old team, so that added a little emotional layer to the dominant win.
A comfortable victory for Mizzou. Elsewhere, just to round things out, the number 3 UCLA women routed Duke 89-59, which was impressive since they were missing their star center, Lauren Betts.
And we saw Mississippi State fall to SMU in a tough overtime battle, and North Dakota got blown out on the road at Hawaii. The holiday weekend really started to separate the contenders from the rest.
It really did.
And I think that mental toughness, or, you know, the lack of it, that's really the biggest theme that runs through all of these results from the weekend, both in the NBA and the NCAA.
What a weekend it was. The NBA cup bracket is locked. The stakes are sky high now that it's single elimination. You've got the undefeated Magic and Lakers hosting.
The 19-1 Thunder look just terrifyingly consistent.
And the Spurs proved they can pull off a major upset if a team like the Nuggets decides not to show up on defense.
And we saw those huge gut check moments across the league. It really highlighted which teams have that fundamental mental toughness and which ones, like the Bucks and the Cavaliers, are still trying to figure out how to put in 48 minutes of effort.
And this is where the whole context of the NBA Cup starts to get a little complicated.
It really does. We look at the Thunder sitting at an unbelievable 19-1, and they are the clear favorites to win the whole thing.
Their schedule so far has been noted as the easiest in the entire league by a pretty healthy margin. They've only played 4 games against teams that even have a winning record.
And on the flip side, we talked about the Sacramento Kings struggling at 5-15. Well, they have faced the league's toughest schedule by a wide margin.
That's a huge disparity in early season scheduling, and it's a major factor in this cup narrative. You have the Lakers, who also got home court advantage, but they played the 7th easiest schedule.
And Toronto, who is hosting a quarterfinal game against the Knicks, they've played the 4th easiest. So this initial scheduling luck has been heavily tilted towards some of these group winners. It's allowed them to pile up wins against weaker teams.
So this brings us to a crucial and, I think, provocative question for you to think about as we head into this single elimination play.
Considering that teams like OKC, the Lakers, and Toronto have all benefited from these easier paths, what does this tell us about the tournament itself? Is the NBA Cup truly a measure of championship readiness, a test of handling real pressure?
Or is it just a high-stakes bracket that, at least in its first year, is disproportionately highlighting early season scheduling luck?
Yeah.
Is it rewarding teams like Orlando, who've just performed way better than anyone expected against a softer schedule?
Will that whole scheduling narrative just vanish when the pressure cooker of a one-and-done game hits on December 9th and 10th? Or will the tougher, more battle-tested teams finally rise to the top, regardless of their early record?
We are about to find out. Thanks for joining us here on Basketball Home. We'll catch you next time.